Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for joining us this morning. It's Monday morning, and I want to start off the week with a whole new program of things that I don't think we've actually touched on. If we have, it's been a while. But first, I'd like to talk about something that we kind of got started on last Friday, and that is professional jobs or work and the training that's involved. In the last few months, we've had all kinds of stuff going on in the media. The first thing, of course, that comes to my mind and probably the most disappointing thing that has happened in regard to this subject, being trained for the job that you're doing and understanding the repercussions of your actions and your decisions, would be the George Zimmerman case. Somebody volunteering to be a watch person in the neighborhood. Through the years, neighborhood vigilantism has been a part of our culture way back before we had police departments that were assigned to each village or township or county, way before there were the differences between the sheriff's office, the police department, and the state troopers. I mean, we've evolved into a culture of all these different venues for the same thing. A state trooper, supposedly, and I could have my facts wrong about this because I didn't research it, but this is what I think I know. A state trooper usually takes care of things that happen on freeways or turnpikes or what you would call avenues where they go through several counties, several states, if you stay on that road. And that's their jurisdiction. Sheriff's departments are usually assigned to counties. And police departments are usually assigned to towns, cities, communities. So, and what I do pick up on when I converse with all three of these entities is that they don't have much respect for each other, which is a shame and a part of our ongoing problem. Understanding the responsibilities of others, having respect for them, and embracing what other people do to support what you do. So it brought me to the fact Friday when we were discussing things, Shelley and I, and we had a Daniel who called in. We talked about being properly trained for the job that you're doing. And, of course, recently I've been involved, not for the first time in my life, in the medical arena. And for the past few years, I've also been involved in the judicial system. And I see shortcomings all the time. Not my job, not my responsibility, and certainly not my my area of expertise. So I chastise myself a little bit for the fact that I think I can tell everybody what to do. So let me say, I don't think that. But I do think that this, like so many of the other things that we discuss, it bears discussing. And I do think that there's something wrong with the way we have it set up now. So sometimes, unless somebody points those things out, we have the tendency to just accept what isn't right or what isn't being handled efficiently. And I think that's where we've gotten to. We've gotten to that certainly with the medical field, and certainly with our enforcement field. And I think what's going on in the media right now, the story that I read a few weeks ago about the teacher who raped a 14-year-old, and the judge, in his infinite wisdom, decided that the 14-year-old looked much older, so he shouldn't get in any trouble for that rape. Excuse me, where the hell is your head at? So, again, we need to talk about the kind of training, the kind of preparation that's made when you accept a particular job with the responsibilities that go with it. I've composed a little something that I'm going to read first. I'm going to let Shelley rest. I see she's here, but she I don't have her pulled into the station yet. Sometimes the connection is better if she's listening. I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to open that up so that we can discuss it. Professional work and training. Let's talk about what is involved in learning how to do a job, as well as the acceptance of professional responsibility. There's many positions that require task training, such as housekeeping, lawn maintenance, short order cooking, cashiering, many, many others. Jobs that need to be done in almost every aspect of life. Now, these jobs in particular are repetitious. And in many cases, once you learn this job, you're good to go. Every now and then there's variances, especially in short order cooking or even cashiering. And when you deal with other people, you can be sure that there's going to be variables and opportunities for you to stop and think about what it is you're doing and make a decision. But on the whole, learning how to mow a lawn, take care of the lawnmower, take care of the leftover debris after you mow a lawn, learning how to rake a lawn, learning how to water flowers, water the lawn, all of these kind of things are what I call, tasks that can be really trained, and you don't have a whole lot of variables. But again, part of the reason for that is because you're not working with another individual, another person in regard to most of these things. Cashiering, again, is a task, learning how to run a register, learning how to count out change. But with cashiering, you have the opportunity to interact with another individual. So then, you have to be trained in regard to dealing with another individual. You're a cashier. Somebody's handed you a $20 bill. You've rung up $10.28. And the person that you're dealing with says, that's not the right price. I just bought this off a sale rack. It was $8. You charged me $10. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Then you have to be trained to be able to competently deal with this individual. And maybe they're wrong, but chances are they're right, because most of us are pretty competent when it comes to finding things that we're going to get a special deal on in a store. So then your training has to go past learning how to run the register, learning how to understand what the register is telling you, learning how to change the tape in the register. Now you have to learn how to competently deal with your customer. In many, many stores, in many, many organizations, this isn't a part of the training. I know, because I've been trained for it before. Nobody ever tells me what to do if I get somebody who, or if somebody's there to scam you. If somebody's there to hand you a $20 bill, ask you for change, take back the change, and then hand you this and ask for change again and scam you out of money. All of these things require a certain amount of education in regard to them. But these jobs are among the less convoluted, pretty cut and dried as to what you need to do and how you need to handle it. Now, in many cases, you're told purely and simply, if there's a problem, you call a manager, which is very frustrating for the customer and very frustrating for the rest of the people in a line. So, again, training and the availability of understanding what your job really is. There are also many jobs and positions that require repetition with the ability to be flexible. That's what I just talked about. You can do the same task over and over and over and over and over again, but then you have one person who comes in and doesn't understand something. So you have to be able to stop what you're doing, stop that repetitious task, and be able to deal with that person and deal with that person in a manner that shows that you've been trained properly for your job. These jobs can go from menial tasks to more structured procedures. Working where you interact with others often requires thinking for yourself and being a team player. In other words, you often have to play well with others. This is such an offhanded comment, and yet is so incredibly important. So incredibly important. Do you think somebody who walks into where you work and sees that you don't get along with anybody that you're working with feels comfortable with you or feels comfortable in the place that they just came in to spend their time or their money or both? It doesn't. You have to appear as though you are a well-trained volleyball team. And by that, I mean volleyball is one of those sports that really requires a team. Baseball, you have to catch the ball by yourself. You have to hit the ball by yourself. You have to run the bases by yourself. It's a team, but you actually do the sport itself as an individual. Hence why some people on the team make $1 million a game and some people make, $125 a game. It's a part of being an adult to be able to interact with your coworkers and work well together and to support each other. However, there's also jobs that require a true education to be prepared to manage the work expected of you. This is really what I think we need to examine. Let's look at doctors. A lot of education required. Then why are we so often left in the hands of the doctor's assistant? Good question, right? Nurses. Education in this field varies in accordance with type of nurse you want to be, RN, PN, etc. I don't even know all the names of the different kinds of nurses. Why are we often left in the care of the nurse's aide? She had the least amount of education. Policemen. Education required. Then they work their way up in the ranks. Tough training, tough job, set up to be the enforcers of our laws. Why are they left to be marriage counselors, truant officers, mediators, etc.? One of the most dangerous jobs in our world today, and yet we support citizens' involvement to protect our neighborhoods. As a manager, I learned early on that you must train and enlighten any worker in almost any task if you expect some kind of protocol. Tried and true techniques should be trained and understood. People that are not properly trained should not be given these responsibilities. This is why so many sad stories are shared every day. What are the requirements when a person volunteers to serve or protect? How about school volunteers, the hospital, neighborhood watch, daycare centers, hospice, security companies? Then there is our court system, lots of education. Who passes with A's and who passes with D's is not common knowledge. I can't even go into who cares and who does not, but we do know it's probably not a good ratio. When we read the news every day and we see it on TV or on the computer, we cannot help but realize that we have some amazing and wonderful people in our world. That's a given. We really, really do. However, we also see a great deal of dysfunctionality. I believe some of it is because no time is taken to be sure the ones that are capable because they know their job are the ones that are actually doing the job, not someone who is not prepared and not properly trained to do it. I can't believe the computer let me do that sentence. However, I'm going to read it again. I believe some of it is because no time is taken to be sure the ones that are capable, because they know their job, are the ones actually doing their job, not someone who is not prepared and not properly trained to do it. We need volunteers. We need assistants. We need substitutes. We need aides for sure. but we need them to do the jobs they've been trained for, not a responsibility that needs a 4-year and more specific education. It would, I am sure, cut back on mistakes and misunderstandings, some of which have had dire and deadly outcomes. What are the answers? I wish I had some that would be an instant remedy. To start, you can be smart. Don't ask someone a question that they don't, that you know that they will not really know. We tend to believe anyone who tells us what we want to hear. Seek credentials when it is appropriate. Protect yourself by not being where you should not be. And if something is going on in your life, look for the answers yourself. Our technology today opens many doors. Use them. Okay, so now I'm going to open up the lines and bring Shelley in and anyone else who'd like to participate in this conversation. I think it's a big topic, and I think there's a lot of things that can be said about it. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Renee.
How are you?
Yeah, doing good. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you that this is a very big subject. I mentioned this before on the show that one of the things I do with companies, and I've been doing this for 30 years actually, is when I go into a company and I see how it's functioning, and I've seen this play out over and over and over again. It's kind of why I'm sensitive to looking for particular things, is that when you have companies that started out as a 10-man operation or a 20-man operation, and then they get bigger, and all of a sudden now they have 50 people or 150 people or even more, when they were a small operation, each person was multitasking. Each person had many, many responsibilities that really went past what their job title is. And then as they got bigger and they got assistants and they got departments under them, and it wasn't that individual doing it, something got lost in the translation when they trained somebody under them to take over particular tasks. So if it took them 20 steps to do something, they might only be consciously aware of 8 steps. So as they train this new person, they're leaving a bunch of stuff out, not because they're incompetent, but in most cases, people don't understand all the different steps they take to do something. They see the peaks. They see the big tasks, but they don't see all the little insignificant stuff behind the scenes that they did in order to accomplish that. So when they train another individual, it gets lost. And then when you get into fields like medical, law enforcement, things like that, when those steps are lost in translation from one person training another, or they're just never even brought up, now you've got an even more dire situation. Because I saw the impact on, like, corporate America, on businesses that are making a product and reselling it or something like that. And I went into companies that were getting ready to lose contracts because there were so many mistakes happening. And the mistakes were happening not because these people were incompetent, but because they weren't trained properly. And I would say across the board, in almost every situation, the issue was the person doing the job didn't understand the job completely. I went in there, identified where there were holes in the training, and then voila, the problems got solved. It didn't require anything really heavy duty. It was really just missing steps, and it created created errors that then went to the next department, and then the next department carried the mistake forward. So now take that concept and put it into things that are really critical where you're dealing with people's lives, and you can see how that can really wreak havoc on how the type of assistance we get from these critical areas.
Well, don't you think that sometimes, now like what you just said, I think sometimes if you're immersed in this particular scenario and you have a specific job that you do, unless you go through the gambit of being a customer, a guest, a patient, or whatever, that many times you're oblivious to the problem because you don't even know it exists because you're not doing the program, so to speak.
I think it's a combination of either the steps being aware and not being taught to the person, or particular things not even ever being addressed in the training from the get-go. Like you said, somebody just not experiencing certain things, so then they don't pass that along. But I think a lot of times, and I may be wrong about this, maybe you can address this, I think a lot of times the training is there, but that the person isn't, in other words, nobody verifies that the person taking on that nurse's aide position, for instance, went through all the training they were supposed to. Either there's not adequate testing or something. The reason I say that is the company that I just left, they had a training manual there in a particular department that I had to go in and clean up, and the information in the training manual was actually pretty good. There were a couple of mistakes that I had to fix, but for the most part, some of the foundational information was there, and yet none of the people in this department were operating based on some of the information that was there. And I'm wondering, it's like this manual existed, and was it not being given to these people? Were they not being tested to make sure they understood it? You know, that part of it I never found out, because I just created a whole new manual and cleaned up all the mistakes that were in it. But the point I was making is that in that particular arena, there was the information there, and yet none of the people in this department were utilizing it. So I never did find out where the disconnect there was. So I'm wondering sometimes if the information is there, but either the person doesn't understand it, or there's nobody that's verifying that they did in fact go through it, you know. And in other cases, it's the fact that the training just may not exist. Like the point you just made, that, you know, here there's all these scenarios that can come up, and nobody's addressing them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, while you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, the first thing that comes to my mind, and I'm sure that this wouldn't answer all of these problems, but it certainly would give the opportunity to address a majority of them, and that would be that every now and then, somebody who knows the way the protocol is supposed to work walks through it. Either stands in line at your local Walmart and watches how you are taken care of at your Walmart, or goes to the return desk and does a return and watches how that is taken care of. I mean, I know that there's mystery shoppers. I know that there's people. In the years that I worked for Denny's, there was always a district manager, and the district manager, they changed them often, or changed their districts often, so that they could walk into any Denny's restaurant and critique, critique if first of all, that there was the proper advertisement being shown to guests, so that guests knew that the Grand Slam was $1.99 for instance, or to make sure that there was portion control. Denny's is a big business, and it's a relatively successful business. And I will tell you, in all my training, in all my life, of any job I've ever had, I got the most extensive and the most ongoing training at a Denny's restaurant of any other place I ever worked. So they have something like this set up. Is there still mistakes made? I remember several years back, Denny's got sued for discrimination because a family walked in and kept getting pushed aside on a busy Sunday, and they said it was because they were black. And they were probably right. So, you know, those kind of things are maybe already being done, but I think where I see the most dangerous are in the other areas that I talked about. It's not so much, I mean, you can usually live through a bad experience at Walmart. You can usually live through a bad experience at Denny's. You can usually live through a bad experience at the DMV, which often is bad. But sometimes you don't live, or you don't stay free.
a bad experience in a hospital or in the judicial system.
That's right. That's right.
Those mistakes can alter or end your whole life. So those are the arenas that I see more and more are not being examined and being watched, I guess is the right word. And, you know, we talked about that recently. We've talked about the listening to phone conversations. We've talked about all of our privacy being taken away. And yet, nobody talks about checking out these giant arenas where everyday people have their lives altered every day. Mind you, I know that we have to do something about people who drive badly, whether it's because they're impaired or something else is going on in their lives. But, you know, in the state of Florida, they suspend driver's licenses by the hundreds on a daily basis. Sometimes because you've let your insurance lapse. Sometimes you let your insurance lapse because you lost your job. Sometimes you can't help but let your insurance lapse. You know, there's no way to get in there and say, okay, I'm not driving a car. I've surrendered my license plate. I no longer have a vehicle because I can't afford the insurance and can't afford the car. But please don't take away my driver's license. There's no door you can knock on or phone call you can make to stop that from happening. Does that seem right?
Right. Well, one should have nothing to do with the other.
Well, but they do. One has a lot to do with the other. If your insurance company calls Tallahassee in the state of Florida and says your insurance has been dropped, unless they immediately within, I don't know how many months it is, see a new insurance policy, they won't look to see if you turned in your plate, Shelley. They won't look to see if you did any other kind of follow-through. They'll wait for a new policy to come through in your name. If it doesn't come through in your name, you, not always, but you still run the risk of having your driver's license suspended.
All right. Well, so, I mean, the only time that should play in is if you continue driving the vehicle without insurance on it, because then you're putting other people at risk.
But see, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't. That's not what it's about.
Right.
Of course.
That's what I'm saying. So in that particular case, that's different. But if you're not driving the vehicle anymore and you've surrendered the plates, then that shows you're being compliant. Why do you lose your driver's license?
Because nobody follows through to see if you surrendered your plate. That's why.
Right.
That information doesn't get forwarded along with the information that says you let your insurance lapse.
Well, you discussed this on one of the other shows, is that, you know, we're living in the information age here. Computers can talk to computers, and yet for some reason, with all of our advancements, okay, I mean, you know, you watch these shows on television where they have these holographic computers now where, you know, like these people are moving their hands in midair and they're seeing images in front of their face. I mean, this actually exists now. We have computers that do that. They work on holograms. You know, this is real. This isn't science fiction anymore. You know, and we have that kind of technology. And then the two areas of our country that are the heart of the country are our healthcare industry and our law enforcement industry are working with databases that don't talk to each other. So here you have an area over here in the court system, and it's not talking to other areas of law enforcement to make sure that you've done what you're supposed to do, and meanwhile it's issuing fines and all this other stuff. How is that? You know, like you said, with the medication, how is there not a central database? You have pharmaceutical companies like drugstores, like Walgreens and places like that, and they say bring your prescriptions here because they have a database. So here you're talking a store network. Dick will have a database on you, but your own doctor doesn't, to make sure that you're not putting drugs together that that may harm each other. You know, you hear those commercials on TV, bring your drugs here and we'll look for, we'll make sure that you're not taking drugs that interact with each other. Really? So your pharmacist is going to do that, but your doctor isn't? That doesn't make sense to me.
This all goes back to what we're talking about. This goes to training and understanding what your responsibilities are. If you don't, if you keep it on a real, real simple level, if you don't understand what the repercussions are of your actions in your job place, you cause problems. So understanding what your job is imperative. And understanding what your job is comes with training, comes with proper training.
Right.
Have you ever been someplace and had, I'm going to give you, I'm making this up in my head, this didn't happen to me, but I can envision this scenario from other experiences. You're in a hospital and you're in the emergency room and you bring in your little kid and they're running a high temperature and they're really sick and you don't know what's wrong. And the nursing assistant, not the nurse, not the RN, not the practical nurse, not the doctor's assistant, because they all exist now, not them, but the lady that comes in and makes sure that, not the maid either, because that's a whole different thing. She comes in and makes sure that you've got all the stuff that you need to function. If you're going to need to have the baby put in a nightgown or something like that, they will often be the one that finds the nightgown, all those kind of things. And she says to you, you know, we've had three little kids come in with this week. One of them died.
Oh, boy.
Now, this information is going to snowball into a horrific situation, right? I mean, I'm pulling this hat because I want people to understand if that lady hasn't been trained that it's not her job, or that man hasn't been trained that it's not their job to share a story like that, then can you imagine the repercussions?
Wow.
See that.
Okay. Well, I actually do have a response to that. The industry that I just left, it's interesting that you brought that point up. The industry that I just left was the interstate moving industry. And one of the things that I had to deal with was the manual for the salespeople and for customer service. And interestingly, a lot of the manual dealt with the psychology of moving. And I was actually kind of impressed with this, by the way. But a lot of the manual dealt with the psychology of moving, because moving is one of the number one stressors in a human's life. It's right up there with being fired from a job or going through a divorce. Very, very stressful to move, especially when you're moving interstate. You're having other people handle your property. It's just stressful. It's up there with the top three. And so they spend a very good portion of, and this is part of what I had to clean up, but they spent a very good portion of the manual, both in the sales department and in the customer service department, dealing with the psychology of why people can be stressed out, how to deal with people that are upset, how to deal with people that are irate. And so we're talking like basic level customer service people that are being taught how to deal with somebody who is upset about something, or maybe the driver's not there yet, or they've already picked their property up, it's not at the next location, you know, this kind of stuff. And they have, and what I have to do is I actually have to create scenarios, all right? If a customer calls and says this, and then give them kind of like a basic script, right? And we had about 30 common problems that would come up repetitively, where what the comment was, what the complaint was, what the question was, with a sample dialogue, like what you would say back to that person to put them in a good place again. All right, but throughout, if they kept stressing, if you have a person yelling at you, don't take it personal. because this is stressful. Understand that the person's under stress. You can't get angry with them. Don't ever hang up on a guest. Don't ever yell back at a customer, that kind of thing. And a lot of the manual in both departments handled that. And when I see people in healthcare industry and sometimes in law enforcement, I don't see that. I'm wondering if they go through psychological training, because they're dealing with people in the same token. They're dealing with people that are in crisis. They're dealing with people that, like you said, have a sick child, that are sick themselves, and when you're not feeling well, that erupts fear in you. So they're seeing people who are not at their best, and I'm wondering how many of the people dealing with them are trained in the psychology of how to deal with that situation, because to me, I agree with you, that should be an integral part of the training, and that's almost more important than some of the technical stuff.
Absolutely. It's much more important because it's an interaction with somebody who's struggling. So if you want to make somebody feel like they're being taken care of, you have to take care of them. And taking care of them also means in helping them cope with what's going on. Another famous for me, or infamous scenario that takes place is you have a guest. Let's move to a restaurant scenario again. Restaurants have lots of interactions, especially restaurants that serve alcohol and like a bar restaurant, you know, a place where all kinds of action is going on. And you get a complaint. You are the hostess, and you're the first one the guest can find, and you're standing at the up at the front of the restaurant, and somebody comes over to you and says, "I'm never coming here again. We haven't gotten our food yet, and we've been waiting for, you know, an hour, and the people that are sitting around us are all eating, and we aren't eating yet. This is ridiculous." And this person is very upset. And here's the hostess's reaction. "Who's your waiter?" "Oh, it's John." "Oh, this happens to John all the time. I don't know why he still works here. I don't know. I don't even know why he still has a job here. I know. So sorry about this." But this is their answer. Why? Because then immediately, for some reason, they think that it serves them to commiserate with the guest. Somehow, somebody during their training has convinced them that the guest is always right. So this is their analogy of how you reinforce the guest being right, is to agree with them. And it is to a degree, but not like that. Not
right.
By throwing your coworker under the bus.
Right, right.
You know, you deal with it in a whole different fashion. At Hippocrates, it used to happen all the time. Somebody would come up and say to me, "So-and-so did this and that and that and this and everything." And do you remember what I used to say, Shelley?
Yeah. Oh, really? I'm surprised. They're usually not like that. Let me look into this and see what was going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So even if I was thinking to myself, "God damn it, they did this again, I'm going to wring her neck." Even if in my head,
right.
That is never what I said to a guest. Never.
Right. Anybody can have a bad day. You're not going to fire an employee over a bad day, but if the customer is allowed to think that this is repetitive behavior, then they get mad at you. Like, what do you keep them this, you know,
and then
if they keep making the same mistake?
That's right. So, again, this is what I was talking about in the little thing that I wrote. It all depends, you know, like if you're, like I said, if you're somebody who goes about your work day and doesn't have any interactions with other people except for maybe the guy that's working beside you, and no customer, no guest, no patient, no nobody has the opportunity to discuss something with you, it's a different kind of training. It's task training. You have to know how to do that job. But almost every other job in the world requires a little bit of basic psychology. You know,
right.
you don't incite an already upset guest. You don't push them over the edge. They're teetering on the edge of being so angry that they're going to sue your company, and you push them over. You know, this is not proper training. Let's go to
the fact is that one of the things that, like, using the interstate moving again, because it's very relevant, even though it's a different industry, the training is relevant to many industries, and especially, you know, medical and law enforcement. But one of the things they stress is not to ever take it personal. And I don't understand why. I mean, I've gone into emergency rooms. I've been injured before. I've gone there with somebody else. And sometimes the people are wonderful. You know, I mean, I'm not making a blanket statement. I've been taken care of by people that were wonderful. You can tell that they're very good at their job. You know, you can tell that they care about people, and that's why they're there. And other times I deal with people that act like you're bothering them, that act like they're bored, that act like they have something better to do. They're rude, you know. They throw paperwork at you, and if you ask them a question, they bark an answer back at you, you know. And it always shocks me that you have people in those reception areas that aren't screened, that, you know, that nobody watches to see how they're treated. How did they get in that position to begin with, you know? How do you take the problems of your day there? Because in the manual, that's one of the things. They actually put this in writing in the manual. If you are having personal issues or a bad day, you cannot expose the customer to that. You must make sure that you put your emotions in check before you take that call, because you're dealing with people that are under undue stress. Okay. So here you have a training manual in an interstate moving industry that covered that. How come in the medical arena that's not being taught? Or if it is being taught, how come it's not being enforced? Because I'll tell you one thing, it is enforced in the moving industry. They record all the phone calls. We have people that sit there and just listen to phone calls all day long and then critique certain staff members. Hey, you know, you were too impatient with this person and you didn't follow through and explain this properly. Okay, so here we're talking a non-critical industry where calls are being recorded and monitored to make sure that the staff is doing the right things. Part of it is DOT regulations, so if the DOT comes back and says somebody complained about something, we have a recording to say, no, this is what we explained to the person, we didn't mislead them. So part of it to cover themselves, part of it is to keep up on their training if they have a staff member that's not getting it. So why isn't that being done in these other arenas that are so much more critical?
Well, that's a good question. And that's, I think it's because, like I just said, I don't think there's enough opportunities for somebody who, it would have to be sneaky, Shelley. It would have to be sneaky. I mean, when the boss walks in, everything's the way it's supposed to be, because people are not fools. It has to be a covert operation, so to speak. There has to be people, and I know they have them. I see those jobs advertised where you go mm-hmm. in and check the service or critique what's going on in a business arena. In a hospital, it's a little bit different because you're talking about somewhat of an intricate operation to go in and find out what somebody's doing to take care of a patient. And in most cases, they're doing the best they can. Because it's in my makeup to explain to myself why somebody isn't capable of following through on something, and of course follow through is one of the most, ignored parts of a problem. You mm-hmm. think you fix with a few sentences or a few actions, and then you don't do a follow-through to make sure that it stays on the right path and comes to a conclusion that makes everybody happy. You think you've started it rolling, there's nobody at the end to make sure that, you know, your desired effect is what has actually occurred. So a lot of times that's the problem.
Yeah, that's also a huge, huge part of the training as well in this industry that I was just talking about, is that a lot of emphasis is put on follow-through, and they say that if you tell a customer, you know, I'm going to call you back tomorrow at 10 o'clock with an update, even if you don't have an update, you have to keep that appointment and tell the customer, look, I told you I'd call you back, still haven't gotten all the information, I'm going to need another 24 hours. You know, they stress that in there. Once you've made a commitment, you absolutely have to follow through on it and do what you say you're going to do. Otherwise, you've lost all credibility in this person's eyes. You know, and it's the same thing. You know, you're getting doctors that are giving you a prescription to go and get something, and then you can't find it anywhere. You know, it's like, how do they put you in a position to have to follow through with something and then not make sure you can follow through on it? You know, this is a big issue. One of the things, though, you just made a comment about how would you monitor that? You know, like, because you'd have to put somebody in there to pretend to be a patient or something like that. It's actually easier today ever to do surveillance. I watch these shows on TV. One is called Bar Rescue and one is called Tabitha's Salon Takeover. And they're kind of interesting shows. The reason I like watching them is because these people who are very, very successful in their field will go into failing businesses and then make them work right. You know, they'll go in, they'll revamp them, they'll change the procedures, how people work. And, you know, you have people that are trained in a particular area, and basically what they're doing is they're kind of retraining them, teaching them how to do their jobs in a way where they can actually make money, even behind the scenes. So they're very interesting shows. But one of the things they do is they put in these, like, surveillance cameras before they go in to catch the people in operating the way they operate now, so that they can identify where maybe some of the customer service problems are. You know, why can't this salon get repeat business? How are they treating their customers? So we'll put these cameras in there, and they'll record them for like a couple of days so that they can get information. Well, in hospitals, in reception areas of a hospital or a police department, don't you think they already have cameras? Don't you think they're already filming stuff just for insurance purposes because they've got to keep an eye on what's going on? Why isn't somebody watching those tapes and watching how the staff is going? It's not even something they would have to do covertly. These people already know they're being recorded, but nobody's watching the recordings to say, hey, is my staff treating my patients properly? That's what I'm talking about. So there's already something in place that's very simple. You just got to get somebody to watch it and say, hey, I watched you today and you were rude to everybody that came in. What's the deal? Are you having issues? You know, kind of a thing. There's already a simple answer to that.
Yeah, well, that's a really good point for that kind of the problem. What about the problem that after the person walks out, and if there is no follow-through, say you come in and I'm the office manager at a very, very busy doctor's office, right? And you come in, and you're already angry because something you just said, the doctor told you to fill a prescription that's imperative that you have before your procedure. And you've gone every place. You've called every pharmacy that you know. You've even called a couple doctor friends. They don't know where you're going to find this particular thing. And apparently you find out that they use it in the hospitals, in the hospital pharmacies. Like the VA hospital has its own pharmacy. A couple, Jackson Memorial has its own pharmacy. And you can maybe get it there, but you have to get permission to get it there. So you come in and you run into a brick wall. You can't get this prescription. You've called the doctor's office and spoke to the young girl who answered the phone in the back of the house, and she says to you, well, she says, the doctor wrote that prescription, and, you know, I looked it up online, and it should be available. Well, can you tell me where I can find it? No, I can't. You'll probably just have to call all the pharmacies. So you do that. You think to yourself, okay, you know, if that's what I have to do, I have to do. Well, you still can't find it. So you come in and you talk to me, and I'm the office manager, and I say to you, you know, let me see what I can do. Now, already, So I watch a tape and I see that Susie up at the front desk was very polite to you, very nice to you, but she didn't do a damn thing for you. She yesed you to death and sent you on your way and didn't really help you. Okay, so now there's one. Then number two, I listened to the recording of the phone where you talked to Jane in the back, and Jane told you that she pretty much couldn't help you. I make a note to tell Jane that she needs to do a little bit more research when a person calls her with a problem like this. There's number two that's wrong. Now, number three, you've come to see the office manager, which is me, and I say to you, okay, let me see, when is your surgery? Well, it's next Monday, and today is Wednesday. Okay, I'm going to do a follow-up on this, and I'm going to figure out where we can get this from. Now, first of all, finding an office manager that will accept that responsibility is a very small number.
All right.
But where I'm going to give the best scenario, right? I look at you, I feel bad for you, and I think to myself, you know, I've been in this business for 15 years. If this particular pharmaceutical drug is out there, I should be able to find it easier than you. I'm in this business, right? That's what makes the most sense. So you go on your way feeling much better because I've been very nice to you, and I've told you I'm going to do this. So I get busy that day. I have a note written there on my desk. I get busy that day. The next day, there's a couple emergencies in the office. In the meantime, you go home, and you've put your trust in me. I made you feel like I was really going to help you, and I intended to do so. So you go about your business. Gets to be Friday night, and I haven't called you back. Have not called you back at all. So you're sitting there at dinner and you're thinking to yourself, you know, geez, Renee never called me back to tell me I got this thing and, you know, here it is Friday afternoon already. So I called the office. Nobody's there. You can leave a message with their emergency team if it's an emergency, or you can call 911. That's the message you're going to get.
Yep.
So you leave me a message and you say, Renee, this is Shelley. You promised me you're going to do this. The week got away from me. You never called me back. What happens now? Nobody did anything with any malicious intent. I fully intended to take care of that for you and got so busy. And even though that note was on my desk and I did a couple things to find it, nobody called me back. Because they got busy with their week. You know, just a series of unfortunate circumstances. But here at the end of the
day,
yeah, you're without what you need, and now you can't even get a hold of me. And I must tell you, Shell, this happens all the time. All the time.
Yep, I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. That happens to me a lot of times. The person, unfortunately, okay, the person who's trying to get information today has to be really persistent. If you contacted somebody, and it shouldn't be like that, if people should follow through on their promises, but I see it more today than I ever used to see it. I don't know if it's because people are that busy, or if maybe people are getting desensitized and just don't care about their jobs as much. I think there's probably hundreds of reasons. So it's going to be hard to, like, say, well, this is the one fix for everything. Part of it that people are in jobs that they really don't care about, so they're not functioning at a high level. Another part of it is that the people that do care about it take on more responsibility because they're trying to cover for people that are slackers, and they get burned out. Part of it is that people are distracted with all kinds of personal issues today, and unfortunately they're not trained properly on how to not bring that to work with them. They do, in fact, bring it to work with them. So there's so many different things that play a role in that, and a lot of people don't know how to properly manage multiple responsibilities. So they're looking at their desk. They've got 30 things to do. What you ask them to do is one of those 30 things, and they don't prioritize properly. They don't look at all their tasks and say, well, you know, I really got to get back to that person because they're supposed to start this medication this weekend. I better put this at the top of my list. No, they just throw it on the list, and they get to it when they get to it. People don't know how to look at responsibilities and prioritize them in a way that makes better sense. And that's something you can get training for. There's actually courses out there for how to manage an impossible desk. In fact, I think that was the name of a course I had taken, you know, how to manage an impossibly hectic desk. There are methods of doing that and how to put your mind to it. But if people aren't trained properly and they just come into work every day and do the best they can, it's not that they don't care. It's that they don't know how to do things better than they do. And then, like you said, it causes this trickle-down effect, and everybody that dropped the ball, then it just seems to go downhill from there. It's like it seems like everybody else in line dropped the ball too. So the person who's seeking the information, even though they should be able to count on somebody keeping their word, you have to really stay on top of people. I've noticed that when I do, I usually do get cooperation and people will follow through, but if I just sit back there and wait for them, I could wait weeks or months to get an answer on something that I just have to make a few extra phone calls and finally I get the answer. And it's a little disheartening and frustrating, but in the same token, it's almost kind of the way things are right now, and it shouldn't be. So I would like to see people get better training, people realize they need better training and seek it, and get a mindset that when you've made a commitment, you have to follow through. People are counting on your word, and it really does make a difference when you don't follow through. It's actually not good for you either, because then you get a habit of that.
Well, I think everything you just said is absolutely the truth, and I do think it has a lot to do with our topic today, which is training and the responsibility that you accept when your job lends it to the welfare, the health, the benefits, the service of another, then you have got to be, relatively speaking, on top of your game. And I have a suggestion that I'm going to share with somebody about training a housekeeper. In my career, I was executive housekeeper for a couple different hotels. And you'd be shocked to find out when you inspect a room after a really, really good housekeeper has gone in and cleaned a suite, say. And when you must have inspectors, because they have to go through and make sure that whoever just did a rather difficult, arduous, laborious job did it the way that they've been trained to do it. My favorite story is walking into a suite that smelled wonderful, the towels were decorated, folded, the mirrors were shiny, the kitchenette in this apartment was pristine. Do you know what sat in the middle of the floor? The vacuum cleaner. This housekeeper had gone in, worked her butt off, and turned around and walked out. How she went back to her station and everything without her vacuum, I never got an answer for.
Oh,
my rule of thumb from that day forward, and this was a long time ago, was every job you do, you have to look at it one last time before you put it away.
Mm-hmm.
And to a housekeeper, that means you stand in the doorway, you pretend you just spent $200 to spend the night in this room, and you look at the apartment, you look at the room, and say, am I going to be spent that money to stay in this room, or am I happy? If you're happy, you did a good job. If the vacuum cleaner's sitting in the middle of the floor, you got to do a follow-up. And it's the same
right.
with the end of your when you're sitting at a desk and you've made promises to people, you have to go over your day at the end of your day. When the phone is shut off, the door is locked, you have to look at your paperwork. And this should be a part of your training, a follow-through on everything you've done all day, because you will forget. And again,
right.
This is all in training, and this is all in understanding the repercussions of your forgetfulness, you know, just because it wasn't done with intent to do harm doesn't mean it didn't do harm. So we've run out of time. I want to thank everybody. Tomorrow we are going to talk about eating disorders, so I look forward to that. I love you all. God bless, and have a great, great day.
All right. Take care, everyone. Have a great day.
Bye, Shell.